Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 19 of the Tumbling Saber Podcast. It is Sunday, April 10th, and we are now just 249 days away from Rogue One, 613 days until episode 8. And we'd like to take this chance to wish a huge, very happy birthday to the one and only Daisy Ridley, who has, in such a short time, forever changed the face of Star Wars. Joining me this week, a hat trick of people. James, how's it going?
Terrific, Kyle. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. And back with a kick at the can is Corey. What's going on?
What's going on, brother?
Same old shit. So it's been a couple of really big weeks for Star Wars fans with the finale of Rebels season 2, and then this week was a gigantic week with The Force Awakens dropping on Blu-ray, and I think we were all kind of caught off guard a little bit when we got the announcement on Wednesday. Was it Wednesday? That we'd be getting a trailer for Rogue One. I believe that was Wednesday.
It was
Wednesday night.
And so we all woke up Thursday morning, basically walking into the office to the news that the new trailer was out. And I guess that's as good a place to start as any. So guys, Corey, what did you think of the trailer?
Yeah, I loved it. I was just like you. I got into work, but I actually settled in. I was patient. You told me it was out. I waited till I was all caught up on just a few things, and then I slammed in the earbuds, and yeah, it was awesome. Like, the first thing I have to say this.
Wait. You did work? Actual work that you get paid for before watching the trailer?
Yeah, in my line of work,
James, what did you think about the trailer?
Corey, before you were rudely interrupted by your brother, you had just slammed in your earbuds.
I kind of deserve that, but. Well, the first thing I thought when I looked at the image that was all over the internet and whatever, like, just seeing palm trees in Star Wars, I was like, it was such a different image to me, you know? I was like, whoa. But, like, the trailer itself was amazing. It was nice, short and sweet. The image of the Death Star was just incredible. I liked the siren as well. That had me going.
James, what do you think? I know that you said that it was sort of, the movie wasn't really real in your mind until this trailer dropped.
Well, the movie was real. It just wasn't a Star Wars movie to me until I saw the movie, or excuse me, the trailer. It really, sort of, I don't know if I had doubts that it would sort of feel Star Wars enough without lightsabers, but yeah, and like I told you also, I sort of hummed and hawed. I didn't know if I was going to try to keep myself completely spoiler free, so I didn't watch the trailer until like, I don't know, maybe 4 in the afternoon. Like, I went back and forth all day for a good couple of hours after lunch. I was not going to watch it. And then I just sort of broke down and said, this is the, you know, first peak trailer. They won't give too much away. I'll digest this one. And I was really glad I did. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, you get the...
Yeah, because they didn't really give you too much. Like, they mentioned that they have a mission for the lead, the Felicity Jones character. But beyond that, you don't get a huge amount of plot, which I think is good for somebody like you who wants to get a taste of the movie, not get spoiled, but at the same time be reassured that everything looks and sounds and is going in the direction that you hope.
You're exactly right, and I thought it was perfect. I didn't regret watching it at all. I didn't go like, oh, damn, now I know Vader, you know, shoots down so-and-so. Like, there was nothing too much that I saw in the trailer.
Yeah, I've said it before as well, like, I'm in the same boat as James in the sense that, like, I know the general storyline, you know, basically everyone knows they're trying to get the plans for the Death Star, and this trailer basically, like you said, it's exactly what you said, Kyle, and that, and you're kind of introduced to a few of the main characters, not in a way where you know them, but you kind of have questions, more questions about them, but I don't like being spoiled all that much either.
Well, what's a Star Wars movie if you don't have more questions than answers?
That's the best part about it. That's why we keep coming back.
All right, let's dig a little bit into the trailer here. So, plenty of visual cues to go with here to make you feel like you are slipping right into the time of A New Hope. And it kicks right off with, we see the Lyra Erso character walking past a rebel troop who is wearing the classic grayish, dark, gray garb with that helmet that we see on the Tantive IV at the beginning of A New Hope. And then it opens up into the hangar, which became famous in A New Hope itself They're in the base on Yavin 4, which for anybody who is brought up on the original trilogy, that's one of the more iconic sets, I would imagine. This really had to stand out in your mind as, to quote Han, we're home.
Yeah, I agree. I think it looked like Yavin 4.
Yeah, I think it's not by accident that's one of the select shots we got first.
Yeah. I'm trying to not be as spoiled for this as I was for The Force Awakens and the prequels before it. But I will watch any trailer that does come out. I'll try and avoid leaks.
And they were good with the trailer. Star Wars is good like that. Even like with the Episode 7, the trailers really didn't give you much, really.
No, none of them really did. That's perfectly fine with most fans, I would imagine. Yeah. So they read off her list of offenses, and I wasn't sure what to expect from this character, but I guess we see right off the bat that she's gonna wear the rebel tag very well. That she's gonna have that very soon to be famous line. This is the rebellion. I rebel. Which I liked a lot.
Yeah, I like that line too. I don't know. It's cheesy, but for some reason I quite liked it.
Well, we've never seen, certainly from a female, but definitely from almost anybody in general, we've not seen anybody just outright say, you know, someone who's ready to flip the bird. I guess you could say that Han Solo was that type, but she's very open about it. But she's a rebel. I don't know if we could go as far to say she's an anarchist.
Well, that's the thing. That was kind of one of my questions is Mon Mothma, like that was obviously her. Why are they going after her specifically? What specific tool set does she have? Like, seeing as how she's so kind of reckless and this mission that they seem to have is so important, like, why is it they would trust everything to someone that they don't really know? Or do they know, well, you know?
I do have an answer to that, but it depends if you want me to tell you or not, because it could be a spoiler.
Well, from what I'm sure,
it's a big spoiler.
From what I've heard is that she's Mad, the character of Mad Mikkelsen's daughter, and he's basically the creator of the Death Star, from what I've heard.
Are you too upset knowing that now, James? Because Corey just ran with it. I was trying to lead us to this with, you know, getting permission.
Well, that's pretty far out there. Like, I mean, I don't surf the internet for this shit all that much, and I found it, so.
I'm not listening. Well, are you guys still talking to me?
Well, if you go back and listen, if you want to know, then if that rumor is correct, then that would seem like a very plausible reason why the Rebellion would target Lyra Erso to lead this mission for them.
That's not such a huge spoiler. I didn't know that, but my guess would have been that she has some sort of inside connection to, you know, someone important who's doing the building. So that, I mean, I wouldn't have guessed that specifically, but I basically would have guessed that.
Yeah, so the rumor is that, exactly like Corey said, the Mads Mikkelsen character is the lead architect of the Death Star. And whether or not he's reached out to the Rebellion themselves and said, this has been a horrible mistake, or if they know that somehow that Lyra can leverage that connection to manipulate her father or somehow worm her way through the layers of security to grab what they need. We'll find this out for sure. But yeah, it seems very intentional that she's been targeted. Now, in these early opening shots, we see the Mon Mothma character, which I'm so glad to see being brought back, standing against that screen. Famously, we would see Princess Leia standing in front of that screen. So much of the A New Hope imagery revolves around Leia in front of that bluish-green screen. It's really cool to me to see Mon Mothma now standing there, and I think it's a great touch that they brought back the same actor that portrayed her in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
I think her name is oh, it's just going to escape me now. Genevieve is her first name. Genevieve, for people who are not.
The casting is really perfect. Really nice.
Yeah, Genevieve O'Reilly. There we go. Or Genevieve, if we have any Quebec listeners. Sorry about that. Yeah, great choice in casting there to take over from Caroline Blackiston. So we move along, and we see, I guess, a bunch of shots of some of the different characters, and then we get our first shot of, I guess, Lyra's abilities, her kick-ass fighting skills, where she just takes down a bunch of rank-and-file stormtroopers. She beats the tar out of a half dozen of them, really?
Yep.
And it's the regular Joe Schmo loser stormtroopers that we came to know and mock for the last 35 years because they're just so weak and stupid.
Well, we came to find out the reason is that's the sanitation uniform.
Yeah, the sanitation guys wear that.
That's right.
Yeah.
They got to go to the gun range every now and again.
But it looks like we have another badass character on our hands, and she's had no problem taking out six of these dolts. But one of the things that really caught me in this trailer overall, which I guess we knew was coming, was a bunch of different looking stormtroopers, and a few of them looking really badass. We saw those black ones, these blacks, I think they might be called death troopers. Maybe some people would refer to them as shadow troopers, but I think they're called death troopers in this one. Something to that effect. They look like they're going to be terrifying. And we see a couple other different type of stormtroopers as well. But what, I guess, we'll probably come around to this again, but I wonder where all these stormtroopers are during the original trilogy era. I think they really could have served the Empire well.
Yeah, I don't love it, Kyle. It seems like just an easy way to sell action figures.
That's exactly what it is.
I get why they're doing it, but it just seems strange at this point that we've become accustomed to one type of stormtrooper. Maybe two if you factor in the biker scouts, but they were just as stupid as the regular.
There's some kind of like First Order from the original trilogy, then they kind of should have been in the Battle of Endor.
Well, right, like the Emperor says, an entire legion of my best troops await the rebels down on Endor. So you would think that these death troopers would have been a part of that, but they were nowhere to be found.
Who knows, maybe they'll all meet their end in Rogue One.
Maybe, or I guess we can invent reasons why they're not around, but maybe it was too expensive for the Empire. Maybe they put so much of their budget into the Death Star that they had to terminate all these programs, and the only way to sustain rank was to just keep the regular red shirt ensign level stormtroopers around and get rid of the rest of the programs. What did you think of the shot of the Death Star being finished with a giant laser disc being sort of fit into place?
It looked cool, I have to admit. It's funny, it looked cooler. I was more excited about that than the Starkiller base. The Starkiller base was very anticlimactic for me for some reason. But to see the Death Star again, maybe cooler than the new weapon from the new movie. I don't know. I thought it looked really cool.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree totally. I thought it was pretty much one of the coolest shots in the whole trailer. And just the voiceover, the narration at the exact same time, the music, I was like, wow, that's a feat of engineering right there.
and now we kind of know how long it takes to build a Death Star, at least for the first time around. And it gives you a new appreciation for how well they did the second Death Star, or how quickly they did it. Because we know they started it at the end of Revenge of the Sith. They were under construction, or they started it sometime between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And now you fast forward about 15 years later, and you're just putting the finishing touches on it. That's a long project.
And that's what's interesting, too. I think I touched upon this in an earlier episode where my theory was, you know, when the episode with Kallus and Zeb, what's it called?
The Honorable Ones.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically, that's where, like, you see all these weird space stations on this deserted planet, and you're led to believe, in my opinion, that that's where they did at least the superstructure of the frame to this Death Star, and they've moved.
Oh yeah, that's a part of canon that the Death Star's construction sort of began in orbit above Geonosis.
So that's so cool how it's all tied in like that. And they have no idea like what is. That's sort of they get their first sniff of okay, something crazy is going on here, you know.
As far as we know, yeah, that could be the first whiff. Well, that's why they were sent there in the first place, to check out what's going on.
That's
yeah, cool. Now their radars are up and they know. And you hear Mon Mothma sort of hearken to that, saying there's a weapons test that is imminent, and we need you to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll see another planet destroyed. Or no, actually, I think Alderaan was the talk. Tarkin said it's the first operational test.
Yeah, he says we'll test the station's power on your home planet of Alderaan. So I don't think that they are successful in doing this test. Unless Alderaan is the test that Mon Mothma is alluding to. But one of the shots I liked was, I love Star Destroyers. I think they're the coolest ships. And seeing like a brand spanking new Star Destroyer on the right up against the background of the Death Star, and then as the shot sort of widens, you see the you get a real sense of how big the Death Star is compared to these Star Destroyers.
Yeah, that is a good shot. I agree that the perspective, the scale it gave there was a good one.
Yeah,
and I find it's a perfect match to sort of the look and feel of 77.
Yeah, I agree. The look of that Star Destroyer just looked, I don't know, it had that whitish quality almost.
Yeah, they seem much whiter than even the new Star Destroyers of the original trilogy. I don't know if that's true or not, or if it's just
fresh
my eyes
off the line.
Yeah, maybe it's as simple as that. And then we got, I think what the moment that sort of wakes you up, because in those first few moments you're kind of dazed, right? A new Star Wars trailer, oh my god. And then that blaring siren.
Yeah, the siren is great.
Yeah.
Like that wakes you up, right? That was sort of the wake up moment where shit gets real.
Yeah.
And then we get a glimpse. There's a bunch of random shots of rebels scrambling around, but then you get that nice long look of the Ben Mendelsohn character in his Admiral garb with his white cape. Now, I don't know who this guy is or what his purpose is.
He seems pretty important.
Well, he certainly seems important. But I wonder, I'm not sure if I'm going to say he's the lead villain of the movie or sort of the puppet master of this movie. Because we had rumors for a long while that really aren't dead, they still persist. That this movie is sunk an exorbitant amount of money into bringing back Peter Cushing as Tarkin in a CG role.
Yeah,
we talked about this on a previous episode of the show, and I wonder if there's room for the Tarkin character as well as this Mendelsohn character, who seems to be pretty high ranking and pretty menacing, and the Vader character exactly.
No, you're right. That's a good point.
Maybe this guy should cut him off at time.
Just to go back for a second, though, that shot of him in this trailer is quite an epic shot. It looks like a live-action version of his poster, basically. It's a really awesome shot.
It is. It's powerful.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a really powerful, authoritative shot of this guy just standing there with his blaster in his hand. He looks like he's not to be trifled with at all. And what do you guys think of the Forrest Whitaker character? Like, I think, for me, I'll just put it out there, he's the one character here, although I think he's a fantastic actor, I look at what quick shots we got of him, and I'm not sure he fits the visual language of Star Wars. Do you guys have any similar thoughts, or am I on crack here?
Go ahead. I kind of thought he fit in, like his... I was more kind of interested in his wardrobe, to be honest. His shoulder guard kind of looked like what Kanan was wearing in Rebels, which was kind of cool. And yeah, I was kind of just, he seemed, I was kind of interested in what he had to say. He seemed like some kind of wise samurai kind of deal, dude.
Yeah, well, we know that we've not been told, or we've been told for months, if not longer, that there are no Jedi in this movie. But he seems to be maybe the closest thing to it.
And that guy that smoked the stormtroopers as well, like, that was pretty, had he had a lightsaber in his hand, there would have been a lot more damage. not just a stick.
Yeah, the Donnie Yen character has another ass kicker.
I have to say that seemed like a cheat to me. I felt like I was watching a Jedi kick some ass, and they like...
Yeah.
They said they weren't putting any lightsabers in the movie, so they didn't, and so it was a staff. But like, that felt like a cheat to me.
So maybe the guy is a Jedi, but he just lost his lightsaber somewhere along the way.
Well, I feel like the language that gets used maybe muddies the water a bit, because what... And again, maybe some things are official, some things are not, but they said no lightsabers.
Which doesn't mean no Jedi.
Doesn't mean no Jedi, but like we've also been told no Jedi. So maybe he's not a Jedi. Maybe
yet.
He's, you know, or yet, or maybe he was and is no longer.
Or maybe there's whatever Maz is. She says she knows the Force, but isn't a Jedi, right?
Right, and as James, once you get into Rebels, you'll see that. Ahsoka is not a Jedi,
right?
But she has all of the training and sort of belief system of a Jedi.
And also there's that other episode with Zeb where, like, one of the characters' people, they're basically, they talk of the Force, but they don't call it the Force. I forget what they call it, but it's kind of like the mother of the universe kind of thing. And
yeah, they call it the Ashla.
Yes, yes.
That was George Lucas's original term for the Force.
That's interesting.
At least the light side.
And Zeb's character too, I believe, I think I've heard, was the original concept art for Chewie.
Yes, he's a take on Ralph McQuarrie concept art for Chewie.
That's cool.
So yeah, I mean, the Forrest Whitaker character, I'm sure he'll be cool, and by the time we learn more about him, and by the time December 16th rolls around and we see him, I'm sure he'll fit right in, but for me, looking at him...
Yeah, you see Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, I get pulled out a little bit too. I see The Last King of Scotland every time I see him on screen, but you know, maybe with some dialogue. He's a great actor, so with some dialogue, I'm sure he'll be able to sort of pull off whatever role he's given.
Yeah, I mean, I, at this moment, I'm kind of skeptical about that, but I know I'll be won over in the end.
I kind of agree with you, and I know what you mean though. Like, I said to myself, and I was like, oh, here's Forrest Whitaker's character. Like, I wasn't like, oh, Star Wars, you know.
Yeah, like, his character design, to me, at this point, doesn't scream Star Wars. It screams sort of like Lord of the Rings steampunk.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the Lost Boys, like, grown up.
Kinda. Yeah, but which isn't a bad thing. It just, at this moment, it's not quite working for me. But we'll see what he can do and what he can't do once he gets on the screen.
But what he told her, as well, is pretty, like, almost Jedi-esque in a way, or maybe just warrior-esque, who knows. But what he's telling her is, like, basically, like, once all that's gone, like, what do you become?
Yeah, well, he warns her against if they catch her, what will she become, blah, blah, blah. And of course, yeah, that as he says that, what will you become? The shot is, you know, that's overlaid with the shot of her dressed in that Imperial, she's in an Imperial suit there.
Yeah, I wanted to speak about that suit. Like, yeah, that suit's so cool. She almost reminds me of an Inquisitor in that suit. Like, she either has that backpack she has. It looks like she's just ready to whip out, like, two batons or two, like, wicked samurai swords and kick some ass, you know?
Right, I'm sure that's exactly what we're supposed to be thinking at this point, that, oh my goodness, is Lyra Erso, you know, really gonna end up on the wrong side of this whole thing?
No, I didn't think that at all. I think she's using that suit to infiltrate wherever she's getting into.
Yeah, no, I agree. She's in disguise. Oh, man, there's a whole bunch of random quick shots, again, as they race through this whatever it was, a minute and a half trailer. Oh, boy, we saw a very, very brief shot of them running through sort of a subway system. Or subway station, really. I guess that's after they're clearly on the run from somebody. And we got a quick glimpse of the Alan Tudyk droid.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's really fast. It's a shot from behind, so we don't get to see exactly what he looks like, but he's there, and he looks like he's a pretty big, bulky dude.
Yeah. I love it.
But I'm stoked to see that thing in action. Like, he's... I love Alan Tudyk and all the work he does, but I'm a little bit afraid that this would be their opportunity to go, like, a little bit too far and make this robot super powerful, some kind of crazy formidable mini battle station in itself. Like, I hope they don't make him seem out of step with what a Star Wars droid does.
Well, from what I read, one thing that, like, one fan had theorized that he looked like a, from what the shot that we had seen from, I guess, the shoulders down, him running, looked almost kind of like a battle droid from the prequel trilogy, kind of possibly converted.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, from what I can remember, the coloring is sort of similar, like a silverish, grayish blue.
Yeah, I'm interested to see his character and what they do with it, because, yeah, he's a funny dude, too, you know, and I don't think they're going to let that one slide.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a fan favorite character by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah, I would suspect he'll be some of the comic relief.
Yeah, Alan Tudyk is always, it's rare that you see him in a role that doesn't include some jokes. I mean, even in his minor role in Frozen, he's funny, at least intended to be funny in all of his scenes. Now, James, are you familiar with any of Donnie Yen's work? It Man, stuff like that?
I don't think so.
Because I'm not either, so people are going crazy about, oh, Donnie Yen is in Star Wars, I can't wait to see this.
No, you know, I've heard the exact same thing from, actually, two people that I know said the exact same thing, and I was like, eh. Like, I felt kind of like the wiener, you know, I was like, I definitely, I'm just like going along with the conversation, but I'm not in the know either.
Well, look, we got sold the same bill of goods for The Force Awakens when word got out that they got the guys from the raid in this, and apparently their action sequence is amazing, and they did such a great job, and people got super stoked for that. And it turns out they just got eaten by a Rathtar in about 12 seconds.
Yeah. But I guess if you were fans, I just watched that movie again tonight, and I was thinking about you and your comments on that when I watched that scene. And I think if we were fans of those guys, we would have thought that their scene kicked ass. You know what I mean?
I would have expected some kind of, because really there's not much that go. They're just staring at each other in that scene, and then they're running around everywhere for their lives.
I think I would have felt that they got undersold, like oversold and underdelivered.
Right? It was a pretty big cameo if you think about it.
Yeah, not like.
Yes,
yeah.
Agreed. From that perspective, yes. If people were thinking, oh, they're in it as a cameo, that's a pretty good cameo.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
In that case, it's all good. Well, but they did go out of their way to say, no, these guys did a fantastic job.
Yeah, you're right. They did build it up a lot.
Their costumes were good.
Yeah, I suppose their costumes are just fine, like most costumes in Star Wars are.
Hey, don't forget, this is the same universe where Boba Fett had three lines in a badass costume and is one of the most beloved characters of all time.
For sure.
That's a very, very fair point. More shots of those Death Squad troopers on the beach. I gotta agree with what Corey said a while ago, seeing palm trees in Star Wars. I wonder if it was like a Travelocity commercial or something at first. Wait, there's a stormtrooper. But these guys, yeah, so we see these Death Squad guys running around, and they're just, the way they move, the way they carry themselves, they're a completely different breed, which I guess is the whole entire point. But it doesn't seem like these guys are going to be
pushovers.
Exactly. They're not going to be the type of stormtroopers that just go down if you breathe on them.
Yeah, their armor definitely looked a little more reinforced. Didn't look so plasticky.
Yeah, there was one comment that my wife, who has watched all of the Star Wars movie, but is certainly not a Star Wars fan, tonight was her first viewing. One of the comments she made, we didn't really have time to talk about the movie much since I came down to do this, but she turns to me at one point and says, why do those stormtroopers wear armor? It doesn't protect them from anything.
It's true.
It is pretty weak armor.
Yeah, she sort of had a point.
Well, they make a joke about that in Rebels. And I'm not sure if that particular episode is on your list of required viewing, James, but one of the carryover characters from Clone Wars, who is a clone trooper, he squeezes himself into a new school stormtrooper suit. And he's like, he makes a joke, basically, the gist of the joke is that the new armor, it doesn't do anything. Which I think was a really clever little joke, a wink at the fans who know that the stormtrooper armor probably is more of a hindrance than anything.
Yeah. That looks pretty hot in there. And the helmets, too. I don't understand. Like, maybe they're giving some kind of news feed in there or something. I don't know. Is it like Iron Man's mask in there?
No, I don't think it's that sophisticated. I think at best they get maybe a very elementary targeting system, which is clearly broken across the board.
Yeah.
And, well, I think they probably have that toxin or smoke filter like Finn alludes to.
No toxins, yeah. Just smoke.
Just smoke. And a transmitter, a radio. That's probably about it.
No air conditioning, though, because they always got to take it off when they're on a desert planet.
Yeah, I mean, when Finn took off his helmet after the assault on Jakku Village.
He had no choice. He was sweating like a bastard under there.
Yeah, he looked like he was going to drown.
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this shot. It's got everybody talking. The shot of that hooded, robed villain walking in. We see him from behind walking towards what looks like either a Bacta tank or a fuel source, a power source of some kind.
It looks to me like it's going to be a hollow projection. Like, right away, when I see the two guards in the background, I totally feel like someone's coming up, be like, you know, someone's going to come on that screen, and that's the first thing I thought. You know what I even did last night, James? I was watching the trailer here at home, and, you know, I'd seen the shot several times, and I kept watching it, and I was like, the character's hooded, but it's so dark, and he's got a cape. So I took a picture of it on my laptop, and I sent it to Kyle, and I'm like, do you think this is Vader, you know? And he's like, no, I don't think it's Vader. But either way, it's definitely, to me, it looks like someone's going to talk to someone, you know, like down on one knee kind of style.
Yeah, I don't have a theory. I don't think it's Vader, but it could be. But I don't have a guess. I've watched it three or four times. There's a few spots I slowed down. That and there's a scene where her droid is walking in behind her right before she fights all those stormtroopers. Anyways, in those two scenes, I slowed down a bunch of times because I want to see the villain and I want to see the droid, but no real theories from me.
Yeah, like, I've got nothing. There's a...
Maybe Vader's helmet's in the shop since the, what happened in the last episode of, Rebels. Maybe he's changing it up for a bit.
Well, the three popular...
How cool would that be, a new look at Vader without, you know, like a different helmet? Like, see him from a different perspective, you know?
Well, don't forget, this takes place right before A New Hope. Literally, right before. Maybe days or even hours before. So I doubt that his helmet is going to look anything different from what we've seen in A New Hope. And in fact, the reports from the set are that the costume for Vader in this movie are as faithfully reproduced according to A New Hope standards as you could possibly expect.
Yeah, it's kind of a big, I guess, yeah, it's kind of wishful thinking. You can't reinvent that character, really.
No, no, and again, like we talked about, Vader doesn't wear a hood. This character's got a hood.
Yeah.
So people are thinking it's, well, Vader is on the list, just because. The Emperor is on the list, but to me he seems like he's too... He didn't carry himself like the Emperor. The Emperor kind of walks slowly and at this...
Yeah, with a hunch.
This old man with, yeah, there's a hunch to him. There's that walking stick. We didn't see any of that. There's nothing here to indicate to me that's the Emperor. And some people are insinuating that it could be another Inquisitor type, but I think it's 0 for 3 there, but again, who am I to say, because I have no better suggestion. I've got nothing. The Royal Guards are usually an indication that the Emperor is nearby, because we only ever see the Red Royal Guards when the Emperor is present, but...
Yeah. Vader's going
to be surprised. I'd be surprised if this was Palpatine.
Yeah, I want to ask James a question. I'd spoken to Kyle about this prior, and I think this is, at this point I'm kind of theorizing it, but I have a feeling that the end of Rebels, like if season 3 is really the end of this show, like, actually no, because no, that wouldn't work. But either way, I think Rogue One could, like, you know how A New Hope starts off with the Corellian cadets taken off from the Star Destroyer, the Star Destroyers?
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, I would love for Rogue One to lead directly into that. You know how, you know what I mean? Like, okay, like, they get on the ship, they take off, and then, boom, like, A New Hope's happening.
Like the shot before.
Yeah, like, it just kind of ends where A New Hope begins.
Well, that's what, when Kyle just said, you know, maybe hours before, I sort of, my brain went there right away, and yeah, they could do that. I wonder if they could also give us some, like, Back to the Future 2, when, like, Back to the Future 2 Marty sees Back to the Future 1 Marty, but hides, you know, around the scene. I don't think they'll literally do that, but we could see sort of simultaneous actions while something else that we're already familiar with is going on, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think the way it plays out, and I've heard nothing to substantiate this, but I think the movie is going to want to stand on its legs at least a little bit. So I think once the rebels escape with the plans, or deliver the plans, I think that at that point they'll believe that they're victorious.
Yeah, that's the end game here.
There'll be sort of if there's a positive moment to end the movie with, that's it. But then maybe I doubt they'll go to down the Marvel road where they have sort of a post-credit scene. But I think the final scene ends up sort of souring that just a little bit, where you see the Empire, they know where they're going. They've tracked them. And you see them just getting ready to take off to follow in pursuit. So you leave on sort of there's a high note, but then oh, shit.
Yeah,
they did get away. So then, When A New Hope picks up, you see the same ship, but now there's a Star Destroyer right behind it. That's kind of the way I see it, and I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
So the last couple shots, there's a couple more action shots of characters that we've not seen yet, but we're not going to do any deep dives here. One of the shots I thought that looked cool was when they ran out onto that beach, and they're confronted by 3 or 4 walkers.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. Like, beaches of Normandy style. But there wasn't very many people, it looked like. That takes balls.
Yeah, I mean, there's almost more walkers in that shot than rebels.
Yeah.
Which to me is problematic if you're a rebel. Like, that's one of those situations where you don't see any hope, right? How the hell do they get out of that? They're on a big, wide open terrain with 4 gigantic Imperial walkers looming large over them. How do you get out of that? So I wonder if reinforcements come swooping in, take out a couple walkers and snatch those rebels out of there.
Supposedly the land speeders in this movie, no?
Yeah, converted snow speeders in their original format as regular air speeders.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they show up and take out some of the walkers. Who knows? But anyway, I think that was a cool shot to end it with. At least the main part of the trailer.
Definitely.
And then the last part, of course, was that very Cloud City looking hallway, the way it was lit with those fluorescent lights, where we see Felicity Jones dressed up in that Imperial, whatever you want to call it. It almost looks like she's dressed as a TIE fighter, but it's clearly more of a combat-oriented suit.
Yeah, I love those shots. I have to, like, that's what, one of the big things from Empire that always, just nostalgia-wise, draws me back, because I remember seeing those kind of shots in Empire for the first time with you, and I couldn't even watch it. I was probably, like, 5 years old, or probably 5, yeah. I remember we were at Ina's house, and I pretty much left the room and left you downstairs, and I was like, can't believe he's doing it, man. Like, all by himself downstairs watching it.
I do remember that. That was one of my first times watching Empire, and I remember being in. It was sort of weird because the basement setting at that particular family friend's house was, the color palette they had chosen was very Empire Strikes Back-esque. It was dark blues. There was grays in there, and it fit the whole movie very well. And I was down in the basement by myself while our parents got sauced upstairs with family friends. And then Corey took off. So I went through with the rest of that movie. And one of those images. Yeah, the image of Luke lighting up that tunnel with those lights, that is one of the, for me anyway, I don't know how many other people have that same image, but that's one of the iconic images for me of Empire. That hallway just sort of really stood out to me in that setting.
Oh, for sure. Dude, that's one of my earliest memories.
So there we go. That was the Rogue One trailer. I thought it looked really cool. I'm really stoked. 249 days. I don't know if it's going to seem like it passes quickly or if it's just going to drag. But I will say that it doesn't quite feel the same as the excitement for The Force Awakens. James, do you feel as excited, or is it just because we've just been down this road less than 6 months ago that now we get it. Star Wars will become part of the routine.
That's tough, yeah, because it's not fair to compare it to The Force Awakens. Longer anticipation, part of the, the main storyline, return of like beloved characters, sort of had a lot going for it that Rogue One doesn't have. But having said that, now that I've seen a trailer, see, I was spoiler free. I was completely trailer free for, The Force Awakens. So I didn't get a little,
I still can't believe that, man. I still can't get over that you didn't even watch a trailer.
Not a single one.
I didn't know that.
I knew for sure what the first 3 seconds of every commercial looked like, because I'd see them and then either turn off the TV or turn away. But I watched nothing. But as much as that makes the viewing itself fun, it doesn't add to the anticipation. So this little trailer really gave me an influx of enthusiasm, for sure, big time.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, you are
more excited for this than I am for the next Star Wars Episode 8.
What?
Yeah.
For real?
I'm more excited for it right now. Because it's closer.
Yeah.
We get it within the next, less than a year. And that trailer really, I'm into the Felicity Jones character. I'm into classic decades. I'm into like seeing the Death Star and the uniforms from that era and all of it. I'm down.
No, I love
it. Yeah, I'm definitely in. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say if I could flip-flop Episode 8 with Rogue One and get the same quality of movie, I would sooner say I'd rather see Episode 8 than Rogue One.
Yeah, okay, but fine.
That's not to take anything away from Rogue One. I'm so excited to see this. I'm just so invested in the new characters that we met in Star Wars, and not to mention what's going to happen with Luke and Leia, and my boy Chewie. I'm definitely stoked about those guys. But
Chewie is definitely hooking up with Maz, just so you know.
My main thing with that is that Episode 8, they're saying it's going to have a very Empire-esque feel to it, which I kind of agree. Like, it's going to They used the word weird at first, I think, which is kind of not the right word to choose. But I think it's going to be dark, and I like that.
But James, how do you think Chewie and Maz hook up? Like, how do the physics of that work?
Like, physiologically?
It doesn't. It doesn't work.
I'll just tell you that you can have a crossbreed dog between a Chihuahua and a Rottweiler. Those exist in nature.
Oh, man.
You're welcome for that.
Steal a line from Jurassic Park, nature finds a way? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that Maz would just get her climbing gear out.
Well, she could just grab on, right?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know how sensitive that hair is.
Hey, are you guys riding a bike?
Is it a little
dingly bell?
I think I just had an idea.
That's what happens when James gets an idea? Alright, so that's sort of a wrap on Rogue One for now. I think for sure we're going to get another trailer closer to fall, and we'll do this all over again, and I'm doubly sure we're going to talk on and off about it in between. But let's turn our attention to why else this was a really huge week for Star Wars fans, and talk about the disc of The Force Awakens. I'm assuming that you guys, I know Corey has his, and James, you said you watch yours or you either rent it or you own.
Oh yeah, no, I ran out and got it, day of.
Good job, guys.
Yeah. I'm happy for you, James. That's awesome. That's good news.
Yeah, no, it was, it's been viewed a few times now. M got her first viewing. My wife got her first viewing tonight, but, yeah, it's, you know what? It's not everything I'd hoped it would be, but I knew it wouldn't be. It's the next disc version of this movie will have everything that I want, I'm sure.
Well, did you get through all the extras?
I haven't been through everything yet, no, but, you know, deleted scenes and stuff like that. There's definitely some neat stuff on there. I just thought there'd be more.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's 8 extra features. I've been through 7 of them. So the table read is, although it's one of the ones I was most excited to see, I'm kind of saving towards the end.
I haven't done it either.
Yeah, I'll get around to that this week, but I said I wouldn't get to the deleted scenes until the end, but it ended up being the first thing I got into just because I knew that it was 5 minutes to see all the scenes.
Yeah, but
man, I disappointing, man. I give those like a, I don't want to say an F, but that's a D. They get the deleted scenes get a D.
I'm sure you'll see some more in the next edition.
Oh, for sure. There's so much, there's so many deleted scenes from this movie that could have been put here, even 1 or 2.
I think that they are so, that their plot, unveiling is so delicate that any more scenes would give too much away. I think some of the stuff ended up on the cutting room floor just so they could keep us with so many fan theories.
True, and it begs the question of whether or not one day they'll do an extended cut of the movie. J.J. Abrams has always said no to that. That, you know, in his mind, the cut that makes it to theaters should be the final cut, period. But I do wonder if we'll ever see, you know, a 2.5 hour, The Force Awakens. I think you could fit another 5 to 10 minutes into this movie and still have it. I think we all agree that when you sit down to watch this movie, the 2 hours and 15 minutes pass by at light speed. It does not feel like that long of a movie.
It feels like a 90-minute movie, I agree.
You know, I want to mention this quickly, Kyle. I noticed you say this on the show recently, but I've noticed in this movie, and I don't think they're ever going to use it again, like, when they say light speed, all I ever hear recently is hyperspace. Because, like, light speed doesn't really work anymore, like, knowing what we know about everything, you know? But I didn't hear it once in The Force Awakens.
Well, don't they call I think they call the Starkiller base a hyper light speed weapon? Is that how they refer to it?
I don't know about that, but when they blast through the shield at light speed, they do use the word light speed, I'm pretty sure. He says, because they say that there's like the shield has a
fractional refresh rate.
Thank you, yes.
The movie is already starting to seep into my brain.
Keeps out everything going less than light speed. So we're going to make the jump in at light speed. I'm pretty sure.
That's, I love that. That's classic Han Solo. he's got a couple great moments at the helm of the Falcon that, I mean, really, we never saw outside of the asteroid chase in Empire. So this whole last 30 some odd years, Han Solo has been touted as this great pilot, and for sure we saw that in the asteroid scene, but in A New Hope, you just see him sort of just, like they allude to in the Family Guy spoofs, where Han says, I know a few maneuvers, we'll lose them, and then the Chris Luke character just says, well, where are these maneuvers you're doing? You're just kind of like lilting lazily to the left. Like, and that's really all you ever see Han do in the original trilogy outside of the asteroid chase scene. So I'm glad that in The Force Awakens, you see Han take off from inside the hangar and going straight to light speed. And that great line of his, when Rey asks if that's possible, he says, I never asked that question until after I've done it. That was classic Han Solo.
Yeah, that was good.
Act now, think later.
And then, of course, like James was just saying, the whole plan is insane to enter the atmosphere at light speed so you can get through the shield. that's like another classic Han Solo moment. Or at least it soon will be a classic Han Solo moment. Right. I don't know if it is yet. For me, it is.
Yeah, that was
your mileage may vary. What else do we have? So we had the deleted scenes, which, I mean, I was let down. You guys mostly let down?
Yeah, boo.
Yeah.
Boo.
Whatever.
And they had a few, you know, 5 to 10 minute featurettes. I thought those were okay. Those were pretty cool. I wish a couple of them, specifically the John Williams one, I wish that was a lot longer. But they were okay. I give those sort of a B-.
How soon do you think we're going to see our next edition of The Force Awakens? Like, how long do you think it's going to take for that now?
With the box set for this trilogy.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
That would be my thought. I don't know if they will do.
That I hope box so too.
Well, here, I guess we don't know if they're going to do a box set of 7, 8, 9. I assume the answer to that is yes, but I wonder if they'll do like a mega box set, 1 through 9, or you'll have the choice of both, in which case either option gives you more extras, or different extras depending on which version you buy, which would be so frustrating.
Oh, I could see, let me think. The last of the trilogy is supposed to come out in what year?
2019.
Which will give them 2 years, so then the box, they can release a box set in 2019 when the last one comes out, 2020. And then, for the 40th anniversary, they can do all 9.
Yeah. Well, the 40th anniversary is next year.
Then that won't work. It's next year.
The 40th anniversary of A New Hope is next year. 77 to 2017.
Oh,
But, you're not entirely wrong.
45th anniversary then.
If they wanted to do the 40th anniversary for Empire, 1980 to 2020, they could do a massive box set there.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Although I guess marking that with the second of the original Star Wars movies is a bit awkward, but if they wanted to tag or use the marketing angle that it's the 40th anniversary, I guess that's something they could leverage.
I definitely forecast 2 versions, the trilogy set and the grandiose 9 box set. Both will happen.
Oh god. That's gonna be painful. Holy smokes. Cause I will probably buy both. I will probably get my hands on both.
Of course, painful is gonna be the day where you know you have to sit down and watch them all back to back to back to back to back. Painful in a good way, but oof, that's going to take some planning.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Once this trilogy is out, when you think about it, 9 movies at 2 hours and change a piece, it almost becomes a mathematical impossibility that you could do it.
No, it's still possible.
It probably just comes in under 24 hours.
Oh. There you go.
So there's no sleeping, and you just got to go. You can't really afford to take any breaks. But anyway, the set's going to come out. And you know you're going to plunk down probably $200 for this set. And you know, we already know, episode 10 is coming right around the corner. So then you're going to, 5 years after that, they will release a 12 movie box set with 30 discs.
Like, I'll probably end up waiting for that. I'll have already bought each one individually anyhow, you know what I mean?
And who knows how it changes, right? Like, we've talked about this about a month or so ago. The possibility of streaming movies straight to your house on the day they hit theaters. So we have Netflix. We live in the age of streaming.
No, something like that. Something like Star Wars needs to be seen in the theater though, opening night.
Oh, of course. But the point is, you may not have to go buying box sets, physical media like DVDs 5 years from now. They may be done with that. I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it. People love the material possession.
But it's slowly, I mean, look, retailers left, right, and center are getting out of that, right? They're using that store space for other things. The CD sections, especially, go look at a Best Buy now. Their music section is almost non-existent, where before it used to take up racks and racks and racks of stuff. It's gone.
But I think Star Wars is always going to be like, people want to get their hands on it, you know, and they want to touch it, they want to have it. Materialistically.
Sure, but they're not going to keep these factories that do, that make Blu-ray discs, cases and all that, they're not going to keep it all up and running just so they could do Star Wars. But anyway, they will be around. But eventually, there will be a day where there's no need for physical media, period. But that day is not here yet. And
before we said, the call,
Disney just has a direct line to my bank account. They could just go take out whatever, as much money as they want.
Okay, I want to ask you something. And James, like I've been reading some, or I've been listening sort of to some other podcasts recently. And yeah, like I listened to, I can't remember the name, but it was Full of Sith. And it's a pretty big one. It's a big show.
It's a great show.
Yeah, it is. It was a very good show. They had amazing guests. They had Vanessa Marshall, a few others. I can't remember. Anyhow, they were talking about it. And on this show and another show, they were basically saying how the last episode, like, I'm still writing, like, the wave of Twilight of the Apprentice is, you know, it's crashed. It's reached its crest, but, like, these people were saying, these guys are like hardcore fans, and I'm in the same line as them in the sense that they literally said like this episode was better to them than some of the, like a lot of the movies. Like one of them even went as far as saying it's like Empire Strikes Back, Twilight of the Apprentice. Like, I was...
Oh yeah, there was no shortage of people who put this, or put Twilight of the Apprentice right up there with the best that Star Wars has to offer it in any shape and form. And I'm not going to take that away from them. I don't know if I agree personally, but it was phenomenal.
Outside of the sort of the circle, like I don't really, outside of you guys, I don't talk to anybody about the episodes because I don't watch yet. But this particular episode sort of creeped its way out of its usual circles and, you know, into mainstream media and stuff. It definitely...
it made waves.
Yeah, it definitely had an effect, sort of a ripple effect outside of its usual area.
Did you hear a lot about it, James?
Well, I mean, I did hear a little bit about it, actually, and since Kyle sort of told me a little bit about a couple of the characters, I know more than I wish I knew, to be honest with you. But that's, you know, that's inevitable when you spend any time online.
Yeah.
I mean, usually, I mean, I write little reviews on the site after every episode, and I usually write them right after the show airs. So there was two episodes where I had to, I just kept going and going. Usually I would stop around 500 to 600 words. But for Twilight of the Apprentice, I was at 2200 words when I tapped out. Like, I just kept writing and writing. I just had to stop myself at a certain point because I don't even want to read that much. Yeah, it was a hugely impactful episode, and a lot of people, a lot of fans, have that episode, that finale, right near the top of their list of the best of Star Wars ever done, film or not.
Yeah, to quote the WWE, it's been etched in the annals of time or Star Wars lore.
Yeah, for sure.
It's that good, man. Like, I can't wait. I can't wait to hear, James, like, when you finally get around to watch it.
We're getting into the territory now where maybe we're overselling it to James, where he's going to watch it and be like, huh, okay.
Yeah, I guess, but...
I expected to have a boner the whole time, and I got nothing.
No, it's just...
I kind of feel like that might be how you view The Kingsman now, Kyle.
No, this damn movie is going to dog me forever. Like, I remember seeing the commercials and being like, this looks like a very unique action movie. I got to see this. And it just fell through the cracks. And there's probably a dozen action movies that I had on my list at one point that fell through the cracks. But Kingsman is the only one where I'm like, nope, I got to go back and watch that. It's the only one I've made a point to say, whether it's 3 years from now before I get to see it, I will go back and see it.
Yeah, I agree, but I have high hopes on it now, James. Like, you've really sold me on it. I've listened to every episode of the show, like I said, and you talk about it quite a bit, and I haven't seen it. I know Mark Hamill's in it as well, which is kind of my bad, but either way, like, I'm really curious to see it. One of my best friends as well, John Bilodeau,
Yes, for all the listeners who know exactly who that is.
Billy. Anyway, you know him, Kyle. Like, I think highly of his taste in film, and he had good things to say as well, so.
Yeah, it looks like it's definitely a riotous movie to enjoy. Which I will do. I swear to God, I will do it. But let's stay on the ride here. Did anybody get around to watching the Secrets of the Force Awakens? It was about an hour and change.
I didn't, unfortunately. It's been a pretty busy week. Like,
don't make excuses, for God's sakes. Nobody wants to hear them. No. Nobody's saying, yeah, I get it.
I'll probably get on that tonight, actually, Kyle.
Yeah, it was really good. It was about an hour and 10 minutes or so. I think you'll get a lot out of it. I think, one of the main takeaways, because they hammer at it right off the top, is that everybody involved was either, at best hesitant or just full out reluctant to do this. And that includes J.J. Abrams, that includes Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher. They were all sort of saying, whoa, like, for his part, Abrams was just like, I don't want the responsibility.
Yeah, he turned it down once. We all heard that. Like, he had it, and then it was no.
Well, his first initial answer was no, but they wouldn't take no for an answer, really. And it was his wife that sort of said, you'll regret it forever if you don't. And then when, this isn't in the documentary itself, but when Kathleen Kennedy said to him, like, who is Luke Skywalker? That was sort of the light bulb moment, I guess, for JJ, where he just said, yeah, I gotta do this. I wanna know, and it would be cool to be the guy to have to lay that out. It was strange, like, everybody was, I don't know if it intimidated is the right word, but they just were like, wow, like, where do you go from here? Like, the characters have been more or less dormant for 30 years. How do you bring them back and give them something meaningful to do? I thought that was fascinating.
It's interesting that when you say it like that, from that perspective, and then look at the movie that they put out there, Han Solo and Chewie had reasonably big roles compared to some of the other, vets. But basically.
Oh yeah, for sure. This is Han Solo's movie.
Right. But the veterans basically weren't in the movie hardly at all. And they will be, like, their characters and their storylines will get played out over the rest of the trilogy, but they sort of were able to set them aside and let these new characters develop in order to tell the rest of their story later on.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. Oh, and what, Corey, you want to say something?
No, I'm good.
I thought I heard you about to jump in there. One of the other things, I got a chuckle out of it. If you followed the news right from the beginning from The Force Awakens, it went through a couple different writers. And it would raise eyebrows saying, what's going on? Why are they changing writers? So initially they had hired Michael Arndt to do the screenplay. And they said, Kathleen Kennedy in the documentary says, it usually takes him 2 to 3 years to sort of immerse himself into the whole world and to crank out a screenplay. But by this point it was already, I can't remember what year it was, but they knew they had about 2 years to put out a movie. So they were, without saying it, they needed him to sort of break his rules and put out a movie quicker than he's used to. And it just became obvious to Disney that that was not going to happen. So I laughed like out loud when listening to Kathleen Kennedy sort of discuss the transition from handing off from Michael Arndt to Lawrence Kasdan. And she did, and this is, I guess, a compliment to her, to take a situation that was probably not pleasant to deal with and made it sound like it was just a normal part of business where you just, basically they fired him. Like, they just didn't want to wait for him anymore. So they said, you're done. And Lawrence Kasdan, you're back in the saddle. Get to work. So him and Abrams went ahead and basically scrapped it. What Michael Arndt had done and cranked out their own screenplay pretty quickly, which I thought was pretty funny, because at the best of times that's a pretty acrimonious situation, but it just made it sound like yeah, just, you know, something didn't work out. And, oh, well, we just moved right along seamlessly. No problem. We're all still good friends.
That's how the big machine works, though, right?
Yeah.
Well, it shows how polished she is, I guess, as a businesswoman. That she can just tell that story. And, yeah, you're like, okay, that sounds like it was probably okay. But realistically, I think that probably had to suck for everybody involved.
Well, touching back before, like, I want to say you did use the right word in saying that people were intimidated by this project in general. And, like, touching back on Kathleen Kennedy, like, yeah, like, when that news came out, I was kind of, like, she didn't, like, lull me into that. I was kind of worried at first, because I was really, like, I was anxious to see what the original screenplay was going to be about, you know, and I thought, oh, no, the script's in trouble, this is not good. But
well, that's always a bad sign, right? Whenever you hear that a movie is going into rewrites,
yeah,
after so long, you're like, oh, shit, it's terrible.
But from what I've been meant to understand is that, like, they built off the original screenplay, you know? They didn't scrap all his work.
No, you're probably right. I don't think they tore it all up and started over from scratch. But you know, building off it could mean anything, really.
Actually, that building off it worries me more. It's like, you know, we don't have time to start all over again, so this kind of fits for what I'm doing, and this... we can use this. Like, I don't like when they steal in bits and parts. When they do a rewrite, I hope they have a time to start all the way over again, if you know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean, yeah. So, yeah, just take something that isn't yours and keep working with it. I know you're not in that headspace, but get in that headspace where that writer was.
And we don't want to spend the money on doing it all over again.
And I'm sure that's the case for Episode 8 as well. And, like, all the films in general, basically, like, just how the tone of the films went, like, they kind of rode what the fans were feeling in a way. Like, I'm sure Episode 8 is kind of, they've kind of, like, written new things according to how fans have reacted, you know?
Well, for Episode 8, Rian Johnson's pretty much got both of his hands wrapped right around its throat. Like, this is he's writing it and he's directing it. So this movie is truly
his baby,
his project. And he recently did, a heavy rewrite as far as the rumors go, and that was apparently focus more on the Rays and the Finns of The Force Awakens to give them more screen time in Episode 8 because they had just been so well received. I guess a lot of new characters were scheduled to get more time than or I guess they were scheduled to get more time than we thought they'd get. But now they've gone back and revised that.
Actually,
apparently.
I saw something right before coming on the show. I was on Facebook for a second, and I saw this thing on Movie News that was saying it was a female by the last name of Tran, I believe, saying that... and
Kelly Marie Tran.
Yes, quoted by Finn, the character Finn... you know,
John Boyega.
Yes. Anyway, saying that she is the new female lead in Episode 8. Like, the words coming out of his mouth saying that.
Yeah, she could just be. She could have a prominent part. I don't think anybody is taking the quote unquote lead from Daisy Ridley. But
no,
I don't think that's
possibly. Like, she's probably going to be doing her own thing with Luke in the background, in the shadows.
Well, the movie's going to have probably multiple plot lines running. And so Rey and Luke will be doing their thing, whereas Finn is probably, or as has been rumored, filming with Kelly Marie Tran. And so he probably sees her as somebody who's getting a lot of scenes, a lot of dialogue, a lot of key action or something like that. So I don't think that the replacing Rey with a new lead. I just think we're getting a new prominent character.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's definitely Rey's story pretty much at this point.
Yeah, there's no changing that.
I just found it was interesting. And I like the fact that they're using all these females. How about you, James?
Yeah, I'm sort of got a massive crush on Daisy Ridley. So they've done right by me there. Rogue One, what's her name, Kyle?
Felicity Jones.
Thank you. Felicity Jones, who was also in The Theory of Everything, which she's absolutely terrific in. She looks like she's going to be great. They're choosing, fun, exciting, enjoyable, entertaining female leads who are more than just pretty. So yeah, it's great.
You guys aren't one of those whiny fanboys who are borderline protesting this, it's not a male lead. This is bullshit, man.
No,
dude, you're not one of those guys?
All those guys can go EAD.
I saw this great website. I wish I could plug it now, but I don't remember what it was. But for $15, you can have a bag of gummy dicks delivered to someone's house anonymously with a sign that says, "Eat a bag of dicks."
Ouch. Man, well, wasn't that a prank that somebody had done to a celebrity where everybody was ordering? I gotta look this up. Yeah, there was bag of dicks. Here we go.
$15 delivered to your door.
There was some sort of prank, and maybe one of the more astute listeners knows about this, but I don't know, maybe it was Bieber? I don't know. But people were ordering these little gummy wangs and having them sent to some celebrity's house by the truckload.
That's terrific.
That's awesome.
Oh man, I can't think of who it was now.
I hope it was Bieber. Well, let's just say it was Bieber.
Sure, why not? We can riff on our Canadian hometown boy, right?
No.
Well, he's not really a hometown boy.
Don't say he's Canadian.
He doesn't count?
No, we just don't have to mention it. We deny it.
I'm curious to see where, after his last album, I'm curious to see where his career is headed. Oh, I'm hoping he can turn out to be another JT, man. I love JT.
I actually like JT too. But I think
after I saw him on SNL a couple times, I was like, this guy's awesome.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, Timberlake is all kinds of awesome. So it was Bieber.
Awesome.
But it wasn't only Bieber. It was also Kanye West.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why didn't we say that from the get-go?
That's
good. Cool.
It was April Fool's.
I'm going to send Kanye a bag. It's no longer anonymous, Kanye. They're coming from me.
Well, they received $500,000 each.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's sort of awesome.
Yeah, so they had this company called Ship a Bag of Dicks had,
what's that campaign company? Kickstarter, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, Kickstarter, you can get people to give money for nothing.
Well, there's those guys who had, $55,000 worth of potato salad.
Oh yes, potato salad guys. We talked about you guys, on the show.
Did you guys catch that one?
Yep.
I didn't hear
anything. In the end, the guy sort of tapped out and just gave the money away and said, you guys do something with it. They didn't know what to do with it, but something was going to get done. I didn't follow up on it, but that got out of hand really quickly. And that's sort of the internet in a nutshell, right? Where something so useless as guys asking for money for potato salad end up with $55,000. This is what occupies my mind a lot of the time. But what is the correct way to cook a potato?
What do you mean?
James, I'm like the best way to eat potato.
What, because I'm Irish? Racist.
We all have Irish roots here. I'm like,
a root joke? Racist.
So, James, I know you had a big fat poutine for dinner tonight.
I did.
So maybe you're either biased or embittered by this whole experience, but the best way to eat a potato.
Okay, in my opinion, the best way to eat a potato is, and there's just no other way to eat a potato, is raw, like an apple.
What?
But that's because I'm Irish.
No, come on. No.
Shitty.
You're going to I want a real answer. Like, nobody eats a raw potato.
I'm a mashed potatoes guy.
Mashed potato.
Yeah, like, mashed potato doesn't need anything else. Baked potatoes are great if you've got, like, great toppings. You know, like bacon bits and chives and butter and sour cream.
Double stuffed.
Yeah, but mashed potatoes, really just simple butter, salt, pepper. That's all you need.
Okay, that's fair. Corey, Best way to eat potato?
I'm really, I'm on the fence between a good old frit and, you know, I like a mash, but my mash, you gotta get some, you gotta get some roasted garlic in there, you gotta get the works in there.
French fried is your way to go?
Well, I'm on the fence between that and a mash, you know, but with the mash, you gotta get...
Take a stand, for Christ's sake. This is the most innocuous stand you'll ever have to take. Just pick one.
You know what, I'm gonna go with the frit.
I'm gonna say you're both wrong. The roast potato is the correct way to eat potato.
Ooh.
The roast potato.
Roasted potato. But you need baby potatoes for that.
Or you could just not be lazy and chop up bigger potatoes into smaller pieces.
You know, I actually made that.
You've done half the work for mashed potatoes now, though. You might as well just mash them up and eat them the right way.
No, because you let the oven do the great work of adding that crispy crust over top, but it's not really a fry. It's kind of the best of all worlds here. You know, it's nice and pillowy inside, but it's roasted and crispy on the outside.
No,
not a French fry.
This is like an all-purpose tool. It's really not good at any of the jobs it does.
I literally had that for dinner tonight. I made breakfast for dinner tonight. Sausages, French toast, Western, frittata, the works, man.
Nice. That sounds good. But, all right, so we had three different answers there. And I'd be curious to know what the other listeners think, if anybody's still listening at this point.
Monte Carlo is a good option to throw in there late. Anyways.
The what?
Monte Carlo potato? Tell me you've had a Monte Carlo potato.
Of course.
I don't think I've had a Monte Carlo. Explain.
Okay, we have to go to Moishe's in Montreal for the best one in the city, but it's basically a double stuffed mashed potato, put back into a shell and rebaked with, like, goodies on it.
I can't get around to watching a movie in my own house. What makes you think I can make it to Moishe's? Ever.
That's a good
you can buy these things. I've had the Moishe's, these potatoes prepackaged, and I think it's at IGA.
Oh, man.
That's where I've gotten them from.
Check it out.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. So, at this point, we could talk about a couple of episode, or a couple other Star Wars-related things that we could just all punch out. But or I'll talk to the interwebs on my own. No, you know what? You're both going to stick around. We're going to do this.
No,
we are going to do this. It'll be quick.
I like the on-the-fly decision-making.
Yeah, executive order here. So, you know those ashes that Kylo Ren stuffs his Vader helmet into, and we all just sort of assumed that not only did he collect Vader's helmet, but he collected the ashes?
No, see, I'm off that theory. When I watched again tonight, I realized that he drops his own helmet into some similar-looking ash-type stuff.
Yeah, I read what I heard what JJ had said about it, but go on, Kylo.
Right, but way back when Force Awakens first came out, we were like, oh my god, that's so creepy. It's still Vader's ashes. Could it be giving him some extra Force abilities or insights to Vader or connection to Vader?
Yes, I do remember we were that conversation.
Yeah, it seemed very likely as well at the time.
Well, it turns out it's not at all the case. Those ashes, they're not Millicent's cat litter. It's, those ashes are the ashes of Kylo Ren's enemies that he has killed.
Yep. That's what I heard. That's what JJ said.
Well, that's straight out of JJ's mouth, so it doesn't get any more official than that. Which it adds a whole new layer of creepy to Kylo Ren.
Indeed. This guy really wants to please someone that, you know, he's trying to be as dark as he can, and he's having a hard time. He's struggling with that. So he's got to do everything he can to kind of try to reassure himself, like, get these ashes, kill my father.
Well, he missed the boat on those ashes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that opens the door for some pretty creepy stuff to happen either in comics or another animated series. I doubt that. Or maybe a live action series. But somewhere, we're going to see at some point Kylo Ren killing people and then sweeping their ashes up into a dustpan or picking them up with his space dustbuster.
You got a shop back. You won't be there. Be like, get up, get that. Don't forget that corner.
That's creepy, though. No,
incredibly creepy.
He's trying to convince himself of something.
Yeah, it's always been that thing that Kylo Ren is a bit of a poser, or he's trying to impress Snoke so much that look how dark I am.
Yeah,
or trying to convince himself as well.
Exactly.
If Kylo Ren was a lawyer, he'd have a red convertible Porsche.
Or if this was 25 years ago, you'd have like a Chrysler LeBaron convertible.
Exactly right.
The K-Car. But yeah, that I read that and I was like, oh man, like whose ashes are in that bucket? Like anybody we know? Like very possible, I suppose. Although I couldn't give you a name at this point, but
well, it could be all the Jedi in training from Luke's Academy.
Oh, can you imagine?
Right,
you
could have let them all on
that
fire.
That would be a good start.
Actually, that's a like, good start.
In her Force vision, there was like sort of smoke and flames.
Yeah, and at the end of the vision where she's standing in that, basically it's the field of slaughter, where it's not at the academy anymore, but it's in that bluish tinted scene, mm-hmm. and there's dead bodies everywhere.
Yeah,
it could be some of those people.
For sure.
Oh my god, learning about whose ashes those are. I hope they do include a scene where he kind of pulls out a space dustbuster.
But it's interesting. You see them up. Like I said, I noticed he keeps his own helmet in a pile of ash stuff. Different from his father's. He didn't drop it beside Vader's helmet, so I guess that's like his thing.
Man, that's creepy. Oof. Anyway, move on to the last thing here before we call it a night. Frank Oz is in London on work-related business. It's not a vacation. So, what could that be? Do we care to speculate?
Grover is going to be in the next Star Wars movie.
Near? Far! That would be spectacular. A Miss Piggy cameo? Grover cameo?
Yeah, that's always something for me, eh? Like, I don't know if any other fans out there listening has ever made that association or have seen or know of Sesame Street, but that, even as a kid, I said, like, I saw the connection there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure, yeah, that one, and once you start going back and forth, you can't unhear the other one.
It's so true.
So, I mean, it's fairly obvious, right? Like, or at least it seems like it's obvious at this point that,
he's got some voice recording to do.
There's some, not only voice recording, he doesn't have to go there to do that. He could be doing
physical,
actual performance.
Motion capture. Most likely.
Yeah, why not?
Motion capture, or, you know, if they're keeping in tune with
Force Ghosts,
everything being practical and as real as possible, then quite likely that he's going to be doing more puppeteering of Yoda.
Yeah, why not? For sure. That'd be great. So,
do you think they'll go back and do puppet Yoda again? Is that if they showed Yoda again, do you think they'd go back to the puppet?
I think so.
I would hope so, because I really wasn't, anyway, prequel Yoda, really,
I wasn't a huge fan either. It just would be,
it's like before and after Kenny Rogers, you know, like, what happened in that short time frame, Yoda? Like,
well, there was the original Yoda from The Phantom Menace, which people were like borderline outraged about, and then they fixed it in subsequent releases. And by the time they got to Revenge of the Sith, he looked pretty good, but again, the whole Yoda flipping around, overly energetic thing, sort of. At least it turns me off. I think James feels the same way.
I feel the same way, but in a way, I kind of liked it, but they drew it out too long. Like, I would have liked to have seen it maybe for, like, a second, you know? Like, okay, I'm getting out of here, like, bang, 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 flip, 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 peace, I'm out of here. You know, not like, hey, look how many flips I can do, pirouette, pirouette. Like,
yeah, I get you. It was a little over the top. But, I mean, we're down with seeing Yoda as a Force ghost?
Oh, yeah. We've seen it in Rebels twice now, and I'm down. He's that powerful. Yoda's that important. And, yeah, he's just that good.
But we know he's still around, right? Because one of the things that impressed me about The Force Awakens on Blu-ray is the sound mix is different than what we saw in theaters. I think certain things have been punched up. So before, of all the times I watched in theater, I could never hear Yoda in Rey's Force vision.
Oh, but you hear it clearly in the DVD. I agree.
Clear as day, it's there. You pick it right up. you can hear him saying the words that he says. I'm not going to spoil it if anybody else is still looking for it.
I want to hear it now. I've read it before, but in theaters I did hear his voice, but I didn't hear what he said.
You can hear it pretty clearly now. So it's there. So he's still kicking as a force presence in this galaxy. So it makes sense, right, that he's probably going to appear. I would presume to Luke.
I was just going to say, yeah, to Luke, not Rey. I mean, she'll get her guidance from Luke, but he could be looking for some guidance, you know.
Or maybe he appears to both of them. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm just curious to see what this first. If Luke is really at the first Jedi Temple, like, that's really where, that's almost my end game in Star Wars, is almost where it all began, you know? Like, that really intrigues me with the temples and just the mysticism behind that. I really hope Luke has some kind of new trick, Jedi trick up his sleeve, like, as we spoke last episode about Ahsoka not necessarily being a Jedi. Kind of like, you had mentioned this, James, being a, between a Gandalf the Grey and a Gandalf the White kind of deal.
Yeah, I think it'd be neat to. It's a sort of shitty analogy, but like from Karate Kid 1 to Karate Kid 2, when we thought like crane jump was the be all end all, but then we found out like sideways drum was actually really kick ass. I hope we find out that there's like something new that he's learned at this temple that gives them some sort of edge.
Yeah, one up. Yeah, and that's what I've been learning.
I think they'll lean heavily on Luke's ability as a Force user as opposed to a lightsaber wielder.
Yes.
Although we will get that, I'm sure.
You know what I really think it's going to rely heavily upon because of how broken Rey... Like, Rey is the oldest of all of them between Anakin, Luke, Ezra, all these people who have learned the Force late in their lives. She's the oldest, and she's going to have issues. She was been abandoned, like, she's gonna have a lot to deal with, so Luke's gonna have to, like, say, like, look, here's the dark side, and it's gonna tempt you, like, he's gonna throw that shit right in her face, like, I think she's gonna have a lot of issues to deal with in the next episode.
Like, well, that's part of every Jedi's path, though, they have to work...
No, but her more so than others, like I said, like, she's the oldest Jedi probably ever to be
I don't think anybody will get it worse than Anakin had it. With the loss of his mother and the loss of his wife and his perceived betrayal from all of his friends.
Well, it's all perspective, right? This kid was abandoned at 4 or 5 years old on a planet somewhere that someone's gonna have to answer to, and if it's her father that's actually Luke, that's kinda like saying, like, whoa, 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 like, I have some questions now that are gonna kinda make me unstable.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Just reminded by something you were saying earlier, did you notice how terrible Unkar Plot looks in this? How terrible he looks in the movie. His costume does not hold up, and I didn't notice it in the theater version, but now that I've seen it a few times on my like HD up close, I find the costume looks awful. He looks like a guy in a fat suit.
If you watch that documentary, he basically is a guy in a fat suit.
I know that, but I find of all the characters, he really looks the weakest.
Well, I didn't notice it, to be honest, but I watched it on my laptop today, so.
Oh my god.
What do you want me to do, dude? Seriously.
Sounds like Kyle, you gotta buy him something for Christmas.
Yeah, seriously. Come on, big bro.
We'll do a Patreon to get Corey a Blu-ray player.
Kickstarter,
yeah, to get Corey a Blu-ray player. And they're like $49.
But I don't watch it. Notice that he looks terrible.
It's not something that registered with me, but I will look for it now, and he's probably ruined for me from now on. Thanks.
Sorry.
I'm gonna be looking for that when I watch it next time.
Here's tit for tat. I'm going to ruin something for you. Because I know, I mean, it's not really going to take any enjoyment away from the movie for me. But it's something that when I watch it now, I'm going to be like, how was this not caught? So I'm going to read it because my friend originally posted it on Facebook. And he says it much more eloquently than I would. So I'll quote him. It's from my buddy Dan Shea. Here we go. So 12 X-Wings go on the mission to destroy the Starkiller doohickey. In a very brief flurry of action, that number is reduced to 6. Okay, so we hear the guy back at the Resistance base say, that's half our fleet destroyed. So reduced to 6. And then there's the first X-Wing explodes on screen at 142.15 and at 142.48. There's another line of dialogue that states, 2 more X-Wing down, that's half our fleet. So here we are. And then we're down to 6. Of the 6 remaining X-Wings, 12 participate in the trench run. Of those 12, 11 survive. 7 X-Wings fly away victoriously.
Great. Thanks a lot.
So enjoy watching those scenes.
It makes sense to me, man. Run with it, James. Just be like, whatever. The camera's in one place at one time. It's a big... whatever. Dude, you think they had 7 X-Wings going on in this thing? Don't even look at it like that. Like, don't even go there.
No,
like,
but they give you the... they let you know how many X-Wings. Like, the shot pauses while all the X-Wings enter the shot. And you can count them. I did it. I followed this along, and it's spot on. And then quickly, you see them. You can actually count them. Oh, no, there's 6 left. And then somehow there's 12 of them that you go back to the trench run. And then one of those gets shot down. It's Eloasti, I forget what his species name is. It starts with A.
I was like, no, not that dude. He was kind of cool and new.
So he gets shot down, so should be 11 of them. But only 7 fly back to the base. It's going to bother me.
It won't bother me. But now that you mention it, it might. Both you guys. Mm.
But that's one of those things you would think that with the number of eyeballs that are watching this thing, and considering most of those are more than likely CG, they could have edited out a few of them, right? Just to keep the continuity tight.
True. Just like his oversight on Chewie and Leia, to rub that sore wound.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit better on that Abrams
owned up to it.
Owned up to it, admitted his mistake.
He did call it a mistake, so.
Yeah, he really did. He manned up. What about this? Did you guys hear that Jon Stewart was supposedly going to have a role in this movie? And that basically, like, all they kind of had left was, like, bad guy roles, and so he was like, no, I'll wait.
I had not heard that.
No, but
I heard something about him in the news, so I just didn't investigate.
Yeah, that's.
I would believe that could be true.
He wanted a role in it, and they were like, yeah, we got something, and he was like, nah, I'll hold out. You know, there's going to be more episodes. I want to be a good guy.
Huh. All right, whatever. He's Jon Stewart, and I'm not, so I guess he can ask for whatever the hell he wants.
He's getting his own show on HBO. It's awesome. Bah.
Cool. Hey, well, I've got nothing else, guys. You?
No. Not for the moment, anyhow.
It was,
Well, this is the only moment, so if you don't have it, you're out.
It was a big week.
It was. I mean, Jesus, the last 2 weeks with the Rebels wrapping up and then the Force Awakens drops and then the Rogue One trailer. It's like the gift that keeps on giving, but I think now we might enter a bit of a dry spell.
Yeah, I love that about that. And that's what you were saying at the beginning of the episode is that, you know, you were kind of surprised that they're doing all this at the same time. And I'm really not. Like, that's the way it is. You know, it's like bang, 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 speed bag style, you know, in your face, well, like ride the wave while it's hot, you know.
Well, May 4th is coming. So I don't know if they're going to do anything for May the 4th be with you.
They never do.
Yeah, it's true.
Nothing really huge, right? They just kind of let people just spread the hashtag on Twitter, and they get free publicity that way. But I don't know if they'll...
maybe we'll get a free comic.
Maybe. I don't know. But I think the next natural place where we'll see any type of real news is Celebration UK. I think that's in July, I believe. July 17th to 19th, if I'm not mistaken.
And I saw that David Filoni episode.
Would you stop calling him Filoni?
Sorry.
It's just plain old Dave Filoni.
Sorry.
He listens, you know, so he's probably not going to... he's not listening anymore.
Mr. and Mrs. Filoni are going to be upset, but Dave's okay. He's a good guy.
Go Penguins go, Dave. Go Penguins go. Sidney Crosby is the best.
Canadian.
I was super stoked to hear what he had to say, that he's got some really big news supposedly coming out at Celebration. That he's going to be directly delivering.
Yeah, we'll see what that is. I mean, I think that's the next place where we'll see news. We might even see you know, our first real look at Episode 8. Not necessarily a trailer, but maybe some type of sizzle reel like we got last year for The Force Awakens.
I saw a candid Twitter shot today of Mark Hamill riding Daisy Ridley piggyback style.
Yeah, like hearkening to the Yoda on Luke's back from Empire.
Correct. So I thought that was a pretty neat shout out. It's probably indicative of the kind of stuff they're shooting.
Yeah.
Absolutely, for sure. What I find really cool about this is, I don't follow a lot of other movie franchises. I don't follow any actually that this closely, but do any actors, is anybody having as much fun as not only Star Wars actors and producers and cast and crew? The fans are just having so much fun during these waits. I know that the Marvel guys are pretty active. Yeah, it seems like the Star Wars guys, especially Mark Hamill and John Boyega and Daisy Ridley, these guys are really having a blast posting stuff to Instagram, Facebook, whatever.
Yeah. I just recently got on Twitter, and it's amazing to see all this stuff that's getting tweeted. I'm like, it's cute, you know? It's funny.
You know what I think it is, or at least in part, it's a franchise thing. That's a franchise effect. I think that happens from coming, you know, doing multiple movies, working with the same people over a long, you know, long periods of time. You get this, you know, lots of behind the scenes stuff and, you know, playful Twitter account stuff. Happened with Lord of the Rings and, like you said, Avengers and Star Wars. And
agreed. But it's fun. It's fun
I
to
love
see.
It. I think it's great.
Wait, we didn't really see this though under J.J. Abrams' watch. Everything was so wrapped up tight. Nothing got loose. And these guys, you really get the sense that they're almost encouraged to interact and you know, be selective. Don't give anything away, but don't be afraid to be public.
You never heard anything about the drone wars, as you guys called it, I believe?
Did we?
I guess we called it drone wars, but so did everybody else. But, you know, that was what they had. Or I don't know if those are what they had in Dubrovnik or if they've got those at Pinewood in England or both. But we haven't really heard of any drone action in taking out other spy drones.
Start a Kickstarter campaign.
Everything Kickstarter. Just give me money.
Let's do it. We're going to build a fleet. You know, a massive fleet.
You know, you actually, if you promise to do something with the money, you actually have to go ahead and do it.
That's fine.
I know you can then just pass that money along like the potato salad guys, but you actually have to have a plan. You can't just get on Kickstarter and say, I want to do this. Please have money. Like you have to
present
your plan.
Hey, if the money's there, why not?
Okay, so find your drone factory. Find somebody willing to build a drone for you and get on Kickstarter.
I have no interest. I'm not a spoiler guy.
All right. Well, I'm done. We're done. I think we've all said our piece here.
Yeah, it's fun.
I had a lot more, but we can cut it out now.
You feeling better, James, after your shameful dinner?
Oh man, I feel like $1 million now.
This whole podcast was like a big palate cleanse. we're like a grapefruit sorbet.
You're like kale, cucumbers, and salad for a week.
Dude, think of it, James. You just had an amazing weekend. You got to watch the Masters, and we recently just became friends on Facebook, and I have the idea that you're pretty big on golf. And
yeah, this was a huge weekend. This was a big one. The Masters was awesome. One of the better ones in recent memories.
James is the only guy I know that has, I think, completed 72 holes of golf in like a weekend or something.
I've actually played 90 holes of golf in one day.
Yeah. I mean, it was some ridiculous number.
Yeah.
90 holes of golf in one day. That's insane.
June 21st, 2014.
I hope you had a cart.
For some of it. Yeah, wow. For a bunch of it.
Like, that's got to be some kind of record, for real.
That's my record, but you'd be shocked, actually, what the world record is for most golf in one day. It's crazy.
Well, maybe we'll pick up on that next week, because I think anybody who has stuck with us for these close to 2 hours, for us to end it on with potato salad and golf, I think we're pressing our luck a bit.
And that's your luck. No whammy, no whammy. Stop.
I used to love that show. All right, guys. James, Corey, thanks a lot for coming in, man.
That was fun. Thanks, guys.
Fun.
Yeah. All right, and guys, thanks again once again for listening. Please be sure to catch up with us on Facebook and on Twitter. And I think next week, whether we're ready or not, we're going to announce the first contest in Tumbling Saber history. So please stick around for that. And if you are in the Montreal area or surrounding area, it'll be of special interest to you. So spread the word to your Star Wars loving friends, and hopefully you can pull through. Lady Luck will pull through for you and snag you the sweet prize that we've got lined up. So stay tuned for that. Head over to iTunes, subscribe, and we'll catch you again next week. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.